This is SiriusXM Insight. And now, Tell Me Everything with John Fugelsang.
I'm really excited for these next two women because I've admired them from afar for quite a while. I haven't met these performers yet, but I'm so psyched we got them on the show. Where do I begin? Zara Norbash is a writer, actor, and comedian based in the San Francisco Bay Area. Her one-woman show, All Atheists Are Muslim, was a highlight of the International New York City Fringe Theater Festival. I did a show there once. Mm-hmm. And Taz Ahmed is a writer, community organizer, and policy researcher out of Southern California. But together, they do the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. You may be wondering, which one's the good one, which one's the bad one? I'm afraid it's a little more complicated than that. It's a pleasure to welcome them both to SiriusXM Insight. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, ladies. Thank you. Hi. Thank you, Taz. Thank you, Zara. Now, is it true that you guys are actually in separate cities?
We are. We're in the same state, though.
Is it?
So you're both really thirsty for water at the moment.
We have 1 year left.
Is it tricky doing a podcast when you're in different ends of the state?
Yeah, we're figuring it out, you know, thanks to so much of the new technology that we have nowadays. It sometimes makes it really, really easy to Skype into each other and do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, yeah, it would be a lot easier if I could just, like, knock on Taz's door and walk over and we could hang out the way we like to do.
Well, what inspired the podcast? And what inspired, well, first off, let me get to the basic question. How did you guys meet in the first place?
That's a great question. So Zara and I were both in the book Love Inshallah, The Secret Love Lives of American Muslim Women. It's an anthology of true stories by Muslim women. And we really, I had heard of her for many years, but we got to know each other through the book touring process. And through that, we've just had some really awesome conversations. I like to tell people that I'm not funny except when I'm around Zara, and it was just really amusing to, like, just be around her energy and have these conversations and be free. And so from that kind of, like, snowballed into having these, you know, social media conversations where we'd kind of jokingly talk about our podcast. And then the joke became actual.
Nice. And what inspired the actual podcast?
Well, we were on Twitter going back and forth with a hashtag, and each of us would claim, you know, oh, I did this thing, good Muslim thing to do, or I did that thing, bad Muslim thing to do. And then we started going back and forth with good, bad Muslim. And after a while, we just pretended that we had a podcast. And we would just keep saying, next time on Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, why pork is halal? And next time on Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, why dating white boys is a great way to get your bank fees goodwilled. And after a while, we had, followers asking us, like, where is this podcast? And we finally got together and got to do it. So a lot of it is because of the desire to hear a conversation like this that's out there. So that's really cool.
And you know, for those who think that one of you is the good Muslim, one of you is the bad Muslim, that's actually not true. You're a bit more nuanced than that. You talk about the things that make you good Muslims or bad Muslims, something I wish more Christians would do in this society. Mm-hmm. But what makes you guys bad Muslims when you apply that label to yourselves?
Well, I used to go to punk shows. I mean, I guess I still go to punk shows. And that was always really looked down upon by my family. The fact that I didn't, you know, that I'm in my 30s and not married, that makes me a bad Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in other ways, I feel like I'm a good Muslim, too, because I'm not the one that eats pork. I don't drink. So it's just this being this dichotomy or this gray zone of being told that I'm good and I'm bad from both sides. And I think Zara had a lot of that growing up, too.
And for the record, I am the married Muslim woman, so good Muslim points right there.
Yet she's a pork-eating one.
Ah.
But I can't say that anymore. I actually honestly can't say that anymore because ever since the Mother Jones article came out about how bad it is at the slaughterhouses, and you know what's funny, and this is why I love so much of your work, John, like my whitey-white infidel husband is atheist. But he doesn't drink, and he doesn't eat pork. He hates it when I say that I eat pork. He doesn't like that I eat pork.
For health reasons or morality reasons?
Morality reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, we get people writing in saying, like, how can you call yourself a Muslim if you eat pork? And I'm like, so is my atheist husband more Muslim than I am?
Yes.
It's my whole thing. You'd think that two religions with such an irrational hatred of pork would find more to agree on, but you know, I'm in the minority on that one. We have a lot of our Muslim comedian friends on the show on a regular basis. People like Ahmed Ahmed, Dino Badala is a regular here, Nagin Farsad, and it really does seem though, that humor is the great equalizer when it comes to this. You guys are up against so much prejudice. After 9/11, I just was astonished, and I'll always give President George W. Bush credit. Oh, it hurts to say that. Mm-hmm. I'll always give him credit for really bending over backwards to reminding his base and all America that, you know, America's enemies weren't Muslim. I always keep telling my atheist friends, you know, the bad guys aren't Christians or Muslims or
but
Jews. It's the fundamentalists.
Knowing what we know now, would he have said that?
However, you know, it seems like you guys are really carrying on that tradition. I think you can have all the well-intentioned activists coming out and saying, hey, we're just like you, and that has to happen. But I think it's people who do it in an entertaining way and use comedy and slice of life material to really show that our commonalities outweigh our differences.
Well, thank you so much, John. It's so lovely to be able to have a conversation like this, and to be able to also, I have to give huge props to my co-host because she carries a lot of the political, basically she gives me all the homework. To keep up with everything that's going on, you know, and I hate this word, the Muslim community, because, you know, it's so diverse and so complex, and most of the quote unquote Muslim community that exists doesn't agree with each other. In fact, some of them don't even believe that we're Muslim.
I love it. There's a billion of you in the world. What does the community feel this week?
Wow, that's a crowded, gated community right there.
I think that's some of the ways that then I guess you have to judge I'm the good or bad Muslim, because I am so ready to, you know, just be like, if there is Muslimistan, I would like to run for fascist dictator. I think I would be benevolent.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and again, the argument I always have with all my atheist friends is that the problem's not the Muslims or the Christians or the Jews. The overwhelming majority of Muslims, Christians, and Jews, conservative, liberal, and moderate, are all getting along fine right now. It's the fundamentalists of all the faiths causing all the problems. It's generally our fundamentalist extreme right-wing assholes against their fundamentalist extreme right-wing assholes that are making life so interesting for the rest of us. But I have to ask, I think Zara, are you the one who's married?
I am.
So how did your family react when you married someone who was not just a non-Muslim, but a non-believer?
And on everything.
Funny you should ask. I have a whole show about it. That's how they reacted. Well, you know, my father, it was really a thing between my father and I. You know, I needed him to see me as my own woman, you know, my own self. And he finally, when he saw that I wasn't going to let up, came a great distance over to my side and said, well, the word Muslim just means one who believes in a force greater than himself. Does the Duncan believe in a force greater than himself? Does he believe in gravity?
Ah.
If he believes in the gravity, it is a force greater than himself. He cannot change it. He surrendered to that force. He's a Muslim.
Well, I actually like how your dad ties science and spirituality together on that.
He is an engineer and a physicist, so there you go.
Yeah, and a bit of rehab in there, too, I think.
I also like that it just turns the entire world Muslim.
Well, absolutely.
But you're an inspiration to me, because I'm going to keep eating pork.
Continually. So let me ask, what is it that makes you guys good Muslims? Because I would imagine the traits that make you good Muslims are some of the same traits that make other folks good Christians, good Jews, or good atheists.
Yeah, that's not that. We haven't had that question. I think one of the interesting things that I think Zara mentioned this in an interview before, is that because she is who she is, non-Muslims come up to her and go like, "Oh, you're one of the good ones," and I think that. That's really interesting, because I like playing in this gray zone, right? Like, we're both bad and we're both good. So, by having our conversations, we're able to kind of push back on both of those frames that we're kind of placed upon. And so we're kind of pushing out from the inside, but we're also kind of pushing into how we're being boxed in. I don't know if that made any sense, but, you know, we're being boxed in through multiple ways.
And, you know, for example, Chaz is also a major community organizer, you know, and I am a, you know, girl who listens to my parents. Like, it was important for me to keep my parents in my life, even though we didn't agree. And I also have sort of that each of us actually has our own belief system in terms of what we do find good and bad values for ourselves. Mm-hmm. That is influenced by our upbringing.
My guests are Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. Together, they run the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. We're taking your calls at 877-9-SIRIUS. That's 877-974-7487. Ladies, as a New Yorker, I'd really like to ask you both, how did your lives change and the lives of your loved ones change after the events of 9/11/2001?
Yeah, I mean, it was huge. I was 21 at the time and living in Washington, D.C., and I was doing community organizing for the environmental community. And I think, after 9/11 happened, I was in D.C. I had to go back home. We were told not to go to the office because of everything that was happening in D.C. I knew things were going to change for the South Asian community dramatically. So, and it did. And, you know, stories would come in. The FBI came to my parents' house. I would hear of friends who had to take off their hijab. And I think for me, it really changed because it really forced me to look into the work that I was doing as a political organizer and how much need was there in the South Asian and in the Muslim community to organize. So I actually started a nonprofit in like 2004, right after 9/11 happened, because of what happened with 9/11. And just really, it really just shifted how I did my work to be more focused on what is the political power behind the Muslim and the South Asian community? How do we grow this, and how do we tell our narrative when it's not being told?
How do you define what a community organizer is? I assume you're talking about a SAVI, the South Asian American Voting Youth?
Correct. That is the nonprofit I started. So for that organization, I focused on anyone that was brown from the South Asian diaspora, so it wasn't Muslim specific, and we were focusing on young people. Since then, I've been working on a variety of different kinds of communities within the Muslim, Asian American, and South Asian lens. I mean, I don't know how to define community. This is something that Zara was kind of battling with earlier this week. For me, it's like people who are like-minded, who are coming together and working together on common causes. I think one of the things that I was thinking about when you were talking about earlier, John, was that the whole idea of, is the podcast there for other people to learn about Muslims, or is it there for us to find Muslim people like us? And I think for me, it's been really interesting to hear from fans who are the lone Muslims in their community that didn't know there were other people that kind of thought like them, and that they're listening
right.
to our podcast and are kind of being drawn in. And I think that's kind of who I'm trying to find and reach out to.
So you're a community organizer like Barack Obama, who's also a Muslim. I get it.
We'll take him.
Yeah, community organizer became the Republicans tried to turn it into like the worst.
They tried to make it the dirtiest word.
They demonized people who go out into the community and organize and help people.
And I'm like, hello, in the Bible, Jesus tells the apostles, go and make disciples of all nations. You don't get much more community organizer than that.
Right.
Yeah. Right. That, my experience with 9/11 sort of connects to that, Frank. I feel like this is a story that we often, we don't hear about as often. My brother at the time 9/11 happened had cancer. He was in the hospital, and the doctor pre-9/11 was this totally racist guy who refused
Ben
to...
Carson?
No, stop it.
It was Pamela Geller. She has an MD.
Ben Carson's not a racist. He's
We're
a homophobe. Get your bigotry straight.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Go and ahead, ladies.
This guy was he was totally racist. He got in the way of my brother's care. And my family had a lawyer and a suit lined up, a malpractice suit lined up against him. We even had a specialist who was going to speak up for my brother and say that this man got in the way of my brother's care. And when 9/11 happened, the lawyer dropped the suit. No lawyer would pick it up until finally one lawyer told my parents, look, 9/11 happened a month ago. There is no judge or jury in the world who is going to look at you and look at your mom with that thing around her head and side with you against an American doctor.
Mm. Wow.
And we don't hear about the trickle down. I mean, and trickle down is, you know, a poor word for it, that happens to Muslims. And also, here is a doctor running around who, you know, engaged in gross malpractice, free now, like still practicing.
Yeah, and it sounds like the individual racism of or anti-Muslim attitude of him became institutionalized after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Zara, I was reading a quote you said where you said, I identify myself as a pork-eating, alcohol-drinking, premarital, sex-having Muslim. Then I'll have audience members say, oh, you're the good kind of Muslim, because to them, I am less Muslim. And that's a good joke, but it also talks about the incredible double standard we have. I don't know a whole lot of Christians who follow most of the teachings of Jesus. I know they put up a tree in their house once a year. Not a lot of people turning the other cheek and giving all their goods away to the poor.
I follow it by being guilty about having sex. So.
That's good. But what about premarital sex? What is generally
love
the attitude?
It. Well, have it all the time.
Well,
awesome.
Look, hey, Jesus, who is, of course, hailed as a prophet in the Quran, never actually condemned premarital sex, condemned adultery.
I'm going to get so many emails if I'm wrong about this, but I am pretty sure that in the Quran, Mary, the angel Gabriel and Mary got it on. And that's how we got Jesus.
Yeah, it was the first time that the male used a surrogate in conception with that story. But, the Virgin Mary, of course, is mentioned more in the Quran than she is in the Bible. Another thing that a lot of bigots don't really know about too much. The older I get, the less I understand the bigotry, because if you're a Christian, it's not your job to judge other religions. It's kind of your job to love other religions.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the challenges of trying to maintain a religious practice, is that there is a sense of, in religion, of being right and righteousness and what is right and what is wrong. And it's really difficult to not have that sort of hijacked from you and defined for you. And I think a lot of what we're seeing translates, you know, from the Muslim community to other religions as well, where it's really important for you to know your values and what it is that you believe in. The world is changing all the time, and we've got to keep up.
Well, how has the world changed since 9/11? Because it does seem to me that we had this incredible pushback. This bigotry I don't need to tell you guys about. Sikhs were being beaten up for 9/11 around the country, just to show how stupid our bigots are. But it does seem like the tide's begun to turn. Whether you're a fan of a show like Shahs of Sunset, it does seem like the Muslim American community was tired of being victimized and has pushed back using not just earnest activism, but broad entertainment, which I think is maybe an even more effective weapon.
I think you touched on something there in terms of broad entertainment. That's the thing that scares me the most, is that we don't actually have a whole lot of broad entertainment for ourselves in a sense. We have very individualized media now, you know, like I control my Hulu choices. I control my Netflix choices. I watch the kind of news that speaks to me. I go on the internet and read, you know, the articles that speak to me and my opinion. And there isn't really, if you don't want to, you really don't have to travel outside of your community's opinion.
That's interesting. Yeah. And of course, you're also subject to the opinions of your community. In your eyes, have Muslim American attitudes towards feminism, towards women enjoying their own sexual agency, have things changed? Are they getting better? And you know, there's as much diversity in Islam as there is in any religion. But have you noticed in recent years that people are getting a little less uptight over the oppression of women?
I don't know about that. I think what's happening that we're noticing now is that we're just in a social media era where people are able to access a lot more information than they used to be. And there's kind of this emphasis on sharing narratives. So everyone's sharing their stories. And I think that's great, like the sharing of narrative and people being able to access other people's narrative. But I don't know if that necessarily means that, that you know, Muslim women have looser morals. Like, I don't think that's the case. I think I think people.
Oh, I don't think. I don't think so at all. I've known some that I prayed would have looser morals, but hasn't been the case.
I pray for that 5 times a day.
Oh, actually. Five times a day. I pray to that I won't strike out with Linda Sarsour the next time she's in studio.
Good luck with that.
But it does. It does seem like you know. I consider you real pioneers in that sense because look, you don't see this double standard inflicted on Christian women now the way you would have 40 years ago, and premarital sex. There's not as much hypocrisy around it as there used to be.
I think there's just there's so much hypocrisy when it comes to women, period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And to women in religion, and I include all religions on that.
And religion is a form of organizing a community. It's a way of bringing our families together. And if it's not filtered through a feminist lens, then we lose that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll be the first when the feminist revolution hits. I will be the first to take up arms, and I'm sorry both of you gentlemen are gone.
That's okay. My Y right chromosome is proof of guilt, I know.
Right after my husband, he knows this. You know, until I can no longer use him as a form of armor. I mean, we go to war for all kinds of supposed reasons to free women, to support women. It's not true. It's not any more true than there is a Muslimistan out there run by Zahra Norbash, and we've got to save it.
You guys do a lot of fun stuff on the show as well. You give out Good Muslim Awards. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so I think we started thinking about the Good Muslim Award just because, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately is like how I've been a blogger for a very long time. So I've been told I was I'm a bad Muslim by cyberbullies and trolls for at least 10 years now. So I think it was kind of my way of like trying to re-embrace what it means to be a bad or good. So using the Good Muslim Award, we're able to kind of pass our judgment and take that power back and say like, okay, we're saying you're good and you're good. And instead of, you know, calling people bad, which is, I don't know why, but Muslims do that a lot. Like, they're always judging and saying people are bad.
Although Christians aren't like that at all.
Yeah, Christians never do that at all. But you gave an award to a woman in a hijab watching 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah,
that's pretty.
Awesome.
Now that might have made her a good woman, maybe a bad feminist, or maybe just someone with bad taste culturally. But what was the story behind that?
I was in the movie. I was watching 50 Shades of Grey with a friend of mine. I'd like to admit it, but yeah, I was watching it. And in my aisle, there was a hijabi woman sitting all by herself, eating popcorn, big thing of soda, watching the movie. And I was like, oh my gosh, she needs to be my friend because I get along so well. I think, you know, that's kind of one of the fun things I like about being this, like, being on the margins like this, is that I like finding people who are also on the margins. I think a hijabi woman sitting at the movie theater by herself, she must have a story behind her. I really, I never went up and talked to her.
Oh, you didn't talk to her?
No, but I really wanted to. I think that would have been creepy to have, like, gone up to her and said, hey, you're Muslim and you're in this movie. Can we be friends?
I don't know. If you were a guy, it would have been creepy, I guess. But I think it's kind of shocking she couldn't find a guy of any culture willing to go with her to see that particular film.
I don't think anyone would have wanted to go see that movie.
Well, they were showing the Avengers next door, and there were no women at all in there.
Oh, I think lots of guys would have loved to go to that movie with a female date. And you also gave another one to the Women's Mosque of America in Los Angeles?
Yeah, we did.
What made them good Muslims?
I'm in L.A., so I actually got to experience going to the mosque for the first time. It was such an amazing experience. I think growing up and going to mosques, I always felt really marginalized. We would always have to be in the back to pray. We weren't allowed to, you know, see the imam or, you know, like it was a very... The way women are treated in the mosque was very unempowering and did not make me want to be a part of the experience. So at the women's mosque, they basically got this interfaith space and they made it women's only. So and the sermon was given by a woman, and it felt so empowering and so beautiful to be in this space. And you know, when we were praying, I was able to see the imam that was in front of me and like. I don't know if it was the mom, but the woman leading the prayer and the person giving the sermon, and it was a beautiful, beautiful experience. So And it was very courageous of them to start this up. They've been getting a lot of backlash from the Muslim community, Muslim men who are saying that, you know, women don't need their own space like this. And I'm very proud of them to get this going. And I love being in LA and being a part of this experience.
Yeah. And again, this transcends all religion. I always say the more conservative any religion is, the more fundamentalist it is, the more extreme conservative it is, the worse women are treated. This is true in Judaism, in Islam, in Hinduism, in Christianity. Scientology, I don't know. But
Republicanism?
Well, sure. I mean, but again, it's one of the hallmarks of fundamentalism. Mm-hmm. You know, the sex hang-ups, the gay hang-ups, the violence is okay if my side does it, the other religions are inferior, I'm always a victim, and women be thinking too much. And these traits are shared by the fundamentalists of every faith across the board. The tragedy is when people think that all religion is like that and don't recognize the incredible diversity within religion. That's said, you guys doing the kind of podcast you do, and my guests again are Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash, who do the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. I'm curious, what kind of people, well, let me change that, what kind of guys are freaked out by what you do?
I feel like Taz has it on this one. She had the ex-boyfriend who was could have been an FBI informant on her radical love column.
Wow.
What happened?
Well, I have a column called Radical Love, and I write about the intersections of being, you know, trying to find love and being a Muslim woman. Mm-hmm. And I write about, I kind of jokingly write about, you know, how am I supposed to date if any of my exes could be FBI informants? And I refer to the case that happened in Irvine where the FBI sent an informant, I forgot his name, but they sent an informant into the mosque, and there was a recent article that came out in Huffington Post where he said that the FBI had told him he was allowed to have sex with Muslim women if it meant being able to get more intel. I think that's just one of those.
Wow.
As a single Muslim woman who's dating, like, that's, you know, wow. So there could be someone who's trying to be an informant, trying to have sex with me, mm-hmm. and using it against me with the FBI. Which,
wow.
It was a very jokey article that I wrote.
But you're a liberal Muslim. The FBI doesn't want dirt on you.
I consider myself a radical Muslim. So we'll see how that goes.
The FBI, I think, has its own Tinder app.
Let me ask you a question. Do you find that things, well, I guess things are slowly getting better. I want to believe things are getting better. But, you know, as we pointed out, there's as much hypocrisy among Islam as there is among any religion. Why do you guys stay Muslim? I get asked this question all the time because I consider myself Christian. I don't know if the Pope would consider me a Christian.
Yeah.
I certainly don't consider myself a good Christian, but I consider myself Christian the way I consider myself a liberal.
Lapsed Catholic, yeah. I'm always curious about people who stay Catholic.
Yeah, I mean, I know atheist Jews who still consider themselves Jews culturally. Mm-hmm. I can still consider myself Christian in that being like Jesus is something I aspire to be. Why do you guys, who are secular in so many ways, still consider yourselves Muslim?
I get asked this question a lot, because I get asked a lot of times.
I get asked it every day. I know how it is.
And my response to that is, you know, if you look at a lot of atheists, they'll say, you know, I'm atheist, ex-Catholic, I'm atheist Jewish. And I think it is because when you're raised with a religion, there is so much culture that comes with it, tradition, folklore, dare I say mythology, that comes with it. And for me, I grew up with a Muslim upbringing, Muslim values and notions of what it means to be a good person and why that's important, why it's important to listen to your parents, to be family-oriented, be a good member of the community. And when I got to college and I, you know, began to hang out with friends that drank and I started drinking and I didn't really see that as a bad thing, I thought that that made me less Muslim. And that really separated me from my parents in a lot of ways and made me afraid to sort of tell them, hey, you know, I don't practice these things the same way anymore. And I was afraid that that would eventually either they would disown me or it would create this sort of gap between us, you know, that we couldn't cover. And then I realized when my father made that statement, you know, if Duncan, my white husband, my atheist white husband, believes in gravity, he surrenders to a fourth grader than himself, and that makes them Muslim. I realized, you know, this is why I'm Muslim, because of this, because of the stories my father told me, because of the values that I grew up with. And, you know, the other opportunity, the other alternative is to say I'm a Buddhist, like many, many white people.
Right.
I'd rather just be Muslim and say, hey, I practice differently than you do.
While I have you on the phone, do either one of you want to apologize for ISIS? Do you love this? Like, I it's happening all the time. We talk about it with Dean Obadala quite a bit on the show. I don't ever hear Christians asked to apologize for what Christians did in the Holocaust, but routinely our Muslim American friends are called to account to explain away, you know, terrorism overseas, or to at least, you know, prove their own innocence in the matter. It's sort of a crude bit of morality that the majority plays on a minority.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would like George Bush to apologize for ISIS.
Thank you.
Destabilizing the Middle East like that, I don't know that turned out so good.
And some of us tried to warn them, and we were called America haters, but it's true.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the reason why Ronald Reagan spent so many years arming Saddam Hussein was because Saddam wasn't a religious kook. He was a secular thug dictator. Okay. And so, of course, we didn't fire him. I mean, we didn't overthrow him. We fired him, and it took 12 years for him to clean out his desk. But I couldn't agree with you more. To hear a college co-ed call out Jeb Bush saying, your brother created ISIS, was really something special.
Why isn't the media doing that more often is what I want to know.
Do you think that attitudes in the media towards Muslim Americans have changed or at least have improved?
This conversation, yeah.
Well, we don't count as the media, trust me. The media don't want us.
I think one of the interesting things going on is that, you know, right after 9/11, we were in, like, post 9/11 backlash. I think we're experiencing, like, phase two of that, which I don't think is backlash. We're in kind of we're in this era of Islamophobia, which is really constructed out of this, what I like to call, like, a fear industry. It's people are actually benefiting from Muslims being the enemy. And there was a report out from the Center for the report's called Fear Inc., talking about like the millions of dollars that's going into fear mongering and how this is actually being used as a political tool. I think Dean actually talks about this a lot.
Yeah. Well, the Ground Zero Mosque here in New York City, which was not at Ground Zero, nor was it a mosque, was, of course, hyped up by Fox News big time for the 2010 midterms. And as soon as the midterms were over, they never mentioned it again.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, bigotry is used as a force to drive people to do your bidding all too often. And I thank you guys for doing what you do and beating the bigots back with intelligence and wit. And it's really a pleasure to meet you both. I hope you'll join us in the studio when you're in New York sometime.
Would love
likewise.
Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbush, it's really, really a pleasure. Again, the podcast is called Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. How can people follow it?
You can go on iTunes, Stitcher, your favorite podcasting downloading app. And you can also listen to it on our website at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com.
Taz and Zara, what a pleasure to meet you both. Hope to meet you in person sometime. Thanks for joining us today on SiriusXM Insight.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
This is SiriusXM Insight. You're listening to Tell Me Everything with John Fugelsang.